the fuck?
So I give zero
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry to hear Buck for Life is having problems with his computer, because I always like when Buck for Life is in the house. How's everyone doing this evening? Hopefully you're all doing quite well. You've had time to digest the ass-whipping that we received at the hands of the Carolina Panthers, which clearly has not set well with any fans, and certainly didn't day of game. But we're here to talk about that game. We're also here to look a little bit forward towards the Rams game coming up this weekend. We're going to talk about the rest of the activity around the weekend, from the tailgate through injuries, et cetera, and definitely give you guys a chance to sort of to vent, because that seems to be something that folks need a lot. We also have Mark Cook calling in at 9:30. We'll get some scoop from Peter Report to find out exactly what's going on the injury front, which, of course, is going to be top of mind for all Bucks fans with Logan Mankins going down. I saw someone tweet, is this where all pro guards go to die? And I had nothing. I had absolutely nothing when I watched him go down. It was absolutely gut-wrenching. So Save doesn't want to talk about McCown, but we will. We'll talk about everything. Here's the funny thing. I want to remind you guys, some of you guys are relatively new to the chat room. Some of you guys are old hands here. There aren't any sacred calves here, right? So we can talk about absolutely anything you guys want to talk about. I know that I heard already in the stadium, and I tweeted about it. I was actually castigated. That's for you, Mr. Costanza, if you still lurk, by the Twitterverse, because I made a comment about how bad the Bucks fans were, because I have always believed, and I still do believe, that we have one of the shittiest fan bases in the country. And I stand by that, and I give zero fucks if anyone doubts me about it. They can always come talk to me about it, because it's true. We have a solid 35,000 to 40,000 that I'd put against any town, anywhere, any day. Those guys absolutely bring it. But the other ones are just shitty, and maybe every city is like that. I've only lived in one other city, and Seattle was just like that, which is why, in some ways, I can't wait till Seattle starts to suck again. Because those guys will jump off the bandwagon. But it was about, I think it was about 6 minutes in, where I heard zero fucks is how many I give. Zero. Where I heard boos, and I heard people calling for Mike Glennon. And it's absolutely astonishing to me that early in a season, the fans can be that up in arms about what's going on the field. Now, admittedly, what's going on the field was not particularly pretty. I'll give you that, right? And when I had the audacity to speak out against this, I had people say, why shouldn't they boo? And we pay our money and blah, blah. Now, most of that was for people who weren't actually at the game, who didn't actually pay their money. But that irony aside, if I get past that, right, that's not how I was raised. Now, I'm not telling you how to raise your kids. I'm not telling you how to behave necessarily. But I am going to tell you that if I see you boo next to me, I'm going to call you a fucking asshole. So you can go ahead and call the stadium staff on me and get me escorted out. Right? But I was raised to support your team. Now, afterwards, we'll tear it apart. We'll get out the scissors. We'll cut things up. You guys know that I don't have any problem with it. And we will do that tonight. And we'll do it tomorrow. And the articles on the site have done it since the game was played. But that day, at that time, in my belief as a fan, that's not what you do. So, anyway, all those things are things we can talk about. We will definitely touch on things like McCown and Doug Martin, the offensive line, the defensive line, lack of pressure. You know, there's all sorts of stuff. There's not a shortage of things we can attack. But first and foremost, we got to thank the guys that help us do the amazing things that we do. You saw in the original picture, I can actually transition back over that so you see it. This is a shot from top of the pirate ship to give you some sort of a sense of how large the tailgate was this weekend. And before I thank the sponsors, who I definitely have to thank for making us able to do the things we do, I have to thank our team. I've mentioned these guys before, and what I'm going to do is on the next broadcast, I'm going to get all of the names, or I'm going to try and get all the names of the folks that are part of our extended team. We've got a group that works week in and week out to make us capable of doing these things that, to be honest, there's no way we should be able to put off. We probably had 600 people come through the tailgate. It was amazing. So big shout out to all the folks, and I'm going to drop a couple of names, and I don't mean to leave anyone off. We will get all the names published, but you know, Jackie and Ed and Kurt, and Sizzle and Crazy and Spent and, you know, Chris and Aaron, and it's astonishing the list. Crystal and Ryan, Austin, we really do have a group, that is amazing. And allows us to set these things up. And to give you guys an update, we probably raised about $1,500 towards One Voice Foundation net. We're collecting all of that for the entire month, and then we'll give that over to One Voice at the end of the month. The way that grows is at the next tailgate, which will be this Sunday. We'll collect donations in the treasure chest again. We'll net it out. We'll have two watch parties, and we have an auction site that will be going up for this month that should go live probably tomorrow for some items. You can do sort of eBay-type auction. That will help some of our folks who are in other countries who've wanted to participate but couldn't. And then all of the proceeds of that will go to the One Voice Foundation. Now, what is One Voice Foundation? It's a charity we've done a tremendous amount of work for, working to fight pediatric cancer, support the families of children going through pediatric cancer treatment, et cetera. We've worked with Marianne and Donna and that whole crew for a number of years. They are amazing. We can't say enough about them. And what they've done is they've jumped on with this 46-7 campaign. The hashtag is Whipping Childhood Cancer. If you saw the video of us getting pied in the face, it's very much like the ALS Bucket Challenge, except for this one is tied to the numbers 46 and 7. If you don't know what that means, every day 46 children are diagnosed with a form of pediatric cancer, and every day 7 children die from a form of pediatric cancer. So the thought here is if you don't want to take a pie in the face, donate $46. If you do, then donate $7, take a pie in the face, video yourself, like the Ice Bucket Challenge, and get this thing viral the same way they did for ALS, which was absolutely tremendous. So that is what we're doing with that. The video is up there. We'd appreciate any of your support. A number of folks got tagged, and our whole crew took one in the face. I think Kurt's taking one in the face this week because he skated out. He didn't skate out intentionally. We were trying to get things organized, and I didn't see him. So he'll get done this week. So, but big shout-out to One Voice and to everyone who came to the tailgate and was so generous with their donations, et cetera. Wing House of Tampa, Steakhouse Elite, they'll be in the house actually this week, all the way in from Oregon. Ty and Eric will be here, which will be great. They'll get to see this thing firsthand that they help support. Elder Ford of Tampa, we can't say enough about. And we got a couple of events, both at Wing House and at Elder Ford, we'll talk about. Jesse James Spirits, Full Throttle Saloon Shine, AFD Limited, the football training group that I work with, actually stepped up and is sponsoring the rest of the liquor that we need. Thank you very much to Gur and Ricky and the team out there in Canterbury. And then the crew of Blackbeard's Revenge, we're bringing the pirate, of course. Tremendous, tremendous stuff. Now, a couple of things to remind you guys about is this week we have another tailgate coming up this Sunday for the Rams. I will not be there. The crew has the con. So looking forward to seeing a lot of pictures, but it should be amazing as well. The Ring of Honor game is always a great game. My niece, who I adore, is getting married, and subsequently I have to go to that wedding. I tried to not go to that wedding, and that was not well received by my family. So I'm going. But the tailgate will be on. The events in Facebook, share it with everyone. We love having a great crowd. After the tailgate, or before the tailgate, rather, on the 13th, there is a big barbecue over at Elder Ford of Tampa with Gerald McCoy there signing autographs. There's a bunch of great raffles going on. It runs from 11 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I know a bunch of our people will be there. Paint it up. Be great for you guys to get out there. And then I want to pimp out the watch party next Thursday at the Wing House. It also happens to be Dress to Impress Day. And if you know what Wing House means, you know that means they're in costumes. As well as National Cheeseburger Day. I didn't know such a thing existed. Buy one, get one free burgers. And if you're a member of our mailing list, you get your 15% off as well. That, I think, covers most of our housekeeping. Oh, we got the September 19th event at Keelan Curley with Pewter Report. Mark Cook will be on later. I'm sure we'll talk about that as well. And I think that covers all of our housekeeping. Let me see here. 9:10? Yeah, not bad. The last comment is a lot of great articles got put up this weekend. We've got three guys now writing for us that are doing a great job. You guys know Patches. Connor Philpott out of Ireland also posted an article. We were a little late on getting the editing, so we apologize to Connor. And then Yuck and Ears, our man Jimmy Johnson, is publishing as well. So those things are up on our site, and the Facebook comments are enabled. So definitely get a read and spread the word about those because I think we got some really great stuff up there. All right. So let's take a look in here. Looking in the chat room, make sure I know what you guys are talking about. New defense, new offense, new coaches. I honestly would rather see us struggle early and grow than end slow, says Sav. Apparently, I had said it right originally instead of save. So that's good. I'm glad I got it right. Let's just talk about what we saw on the field. So I think we all went in. You know, we had Steve White on last week. I predicted 24-13. I think he predicted 24-10. I think we all felt very confident as fans. It was interesting because day of game, I was talking to a number of fans, and my confidence was waning a little bit. People were all excited there was going to be no Cam Newton. I'm not afraid of Cam Newton, and that's not the thing that concerns me. We've lost to plenty of backup quarterbacks before. I didn't know what we had. And going into the game, the reason I was pretty confident was I felt as though our defense against a relatively young offensive line would be able to do a lot because they showed a lot against Buffalo when they had a chance to actually work. They got the pressure. They created the turnovers. And I figured that our offense, even though it's still sort of finding its way with Logan Mankins in there, we should be able to run to that left-hand side. And if we could run a little bit, we could go to play action. If we go to play action, we've got the weapons. I really did feel as though we had a pretty damn good shot in this game. But it was evident relatively early that our offensive line, even with Logan Mankins, and he went out relatively quickly, we were not going to be able to run the ball very well. If you look at our rushing stats, Javorski Lane represented, I don't know, 50% of them in one run because no one thought in their wildest imagination that he was going to run the ball. But the play calling, and Yuccaneers has got some great stats that we'll go over some tonight, was very pass-heavy, very shotgun-heavy, probably to try and take some of the teeth away from that Carolina Panthers defense, which is really freaking good. And we knew that going in. The challenge with that is that even in shotgun, we couldn't get enough time. Now, admittedly, and I know that I just saw Bucks Princess in the chat room. This was something that she was talking about the other day, and a number of other people were as well. I haven't checked the data from this week on Pro Football Focus. Admittedly, Josh tends to hold the ball a little bit too much, and he does that, I believe, this is me projecting, because he does tend to see the field fairly well. The double-edged sword there is you leave yourself into dangerous positions, especially if you don't have the protection. And I think that one of the things they can do for him and what the quarterback's coach can do for him is tell him to simplify his reads. You don't have to get to the third and fourth guy, right? Make a pre-snap read, eliminate eliminate the ones you want to eliminate, and then just do two reads and then take it and run. Until we get a little bit more stability and get to maintain possessions, when you look at the time of possession in that first half, and it was absolutely hot. We were out there from 7 o'clock in the morning, some of us earlier, and even with an overcast, it was fucking hot, guys. That defense was on the field for, what, 23 minutes the first half? I don't care how good they are. It just doesn't even matter. Now, I didn't count how many 5- and 7-step drops there were because there were so many times where we were in shotgun 11 for, personnel. I don't think it was so many of the drops, but the drops are usually dictated by the route combinations. Quarterback doesn't determine how many steps he wants. Shadowhawk thinks he looks scared to pull the trigger down the field. That can happen, you know. I don't know. I don't know if that was it. I do know that when he took the throws, this is the thing with Josh. This is what we saw in the preseason too. If you give him time, let him get through his reads, let him get to the back step of his drop, he delivers an accurate ball. The pass to ASJ on the double in route, nice throw. Great conversion. I think it was only first down in our first two possessions. Later on in the game, again, when he was able to deliver the ball, delivered accurate passes. Not simple throws a lot of the times. But none of that matters. Well, let's talk about the big mistakes, the ones that everyone was fired up about, the ones that were having the crowd calling for Mike Glennon loudly. The first interception. This is one of those what I call Brett Favre-ian decisions. E2 is in the house. Holy cow. Hey, E2, how are you doing, brother? Listen, one of the people I don't think anyone should get on is Mike Evans. I could not be much more impressed with Mike Evans. Shadowhawk, I'll go back. I did watch the game again, but I didn't watch the coach's film. I didn't have time. But when I do, I'll be able to see that. But the thing about Evans I thought is really, really impressive is Evans is doing things that vet receivers do. He comes back to the ball, and he snatches the ball. The drops of Vincent Jackson, I've said this now for almost 2.5 years, the drops from Vincent Jackson almost always come when he lets the ball get into his pads. And that's just a no-no. I know a lot of receivers do it. Hell, Jerry Rice used to do it. I hate it. I've always coached my guys not to do it. You go get the ball with your hands, and then you secure the ball. And that's something I see Mike Evans doing a lot of, which is tremendous. But on the first interception, you know, trying to force, trying to make something happen, you've got a giant guy behind a not giant guy. You give him a jump ball. Luke Kuechly makes a good play, gets a hand. I didn't think he got a hand in it the first time. I thought ASJ just tipped it. But when I watched the replay, he actually did get a hand in there. And then Josh in the post-game presser said, you know, ill-advised, shouldn't have done it. I don't know. You want a quarterback to take some risks. Do I really get fired up about that one? Not really. If I've got that gigantic guy behind Luke Kuechly, I'm probably giving him a chance to go jump to the ball too. And then that's a good tip and a hell of an interception. The second interception is just fucking bullshit. Right now, in the post-game pressure, he says that, you know, it slipped out of his hand. Not once, but twice. He was trying to throw it out of bounds. I get it. Just fall on the ball. Take the one-yard loss. Not a big deal. You know? That's trouble. But as for him improvising and doing those sorts of things, those are things you have to ride or die with him on. Because he is going to take those chances. He absolutely is. Jimmy Johnson's in the chat room dropping a bout of a bunch of data on you. And that's going to be in his coming article that he's writing. Guys, you're going to have to put your glasses on and your thinking caps on when you read the Yuccaneer articles. I've got the rough draft right here. And what he's done is he's gone through and do a complete scouting. This is going to be some good stuff, but you're going to have to absolutely have your thinking caps on. Now, Leadership South is in the chat room, and you guys know I give Leadership South a lot of deference, even though we talk shit to one another. He is a hell of a coach. Shotgun, 11 personnel, 25 plays, 23 passes, 2 runs. In fact, of the number of pass plays we ran total, we only ran 15 pass plays out of every other position grouping. And I don't have how many times we ran on second down. I do have our second down average distance to go, which was 8 yards, so we're behind schedule already. Second down run pass 6 to 12, so we ran 6 and passed 12 times. Third down average distance to go was 6.7. We were absolutely behind schedule constantly. So our third or fourth down run pass ratio obviously is going to be very heavily slanted towards the pass. What this spells is we couldn't run the fucking ball. If you look at the first half stats, and I know Raheem, stats are for losers. But if you look at the first half stats, and this is before we talk about the possession breakdowns, was Evans pushed out of bounds on that TD or was a mental break? I think he was just scrambling in the back of the end zone. You can't blame a kid scrambling around the back of the end zone, I don't think. His foot hit out of bounds. Now it was tipped, and so I thought he had reestablished. If he had reestablished, then I would have had a fucking aneurysm because the ball was tipped. But the first half summary, guys, paints a very ugly picture. 57 yards rushing on 6 carries, 54 of which were on Jaworski Lane. 13 first downs to 2. It is absolutely a curb stomping that we received in the first half. No, you got to reestablish yourself, Sizzle. That's the trick. It doesn't matter. So once the ball is tipped, if he reestablished himself, so if he had brought his foot back and then got both feet in bounds and then caught the ball, it would have been fine. But it seemed as though he got back in bounds coincidentally with reestablishing himself. Does that make sense? That's how I interpreted the referee's comments. And looking on the replay, that's what it seemed to be. Because I was excited, because I thought on the tip, I was like, fuck it, it doesn't matter. So in that first half of misery, 13 first downs to 2, 205 total yards to 84, of which 54 went to Jaworski Lane. Now, their third down's interesting. their third down conversion rate wasn't that great. I mean, they were 40%. We were at 50%. Now, I'm going to suspect, I haven't done the extended numbers on that, I believe most of those were in the second half for us because we were shit in the first half, Kurt. But it's a very good question to compare the two teams. I don't think that Buccaneers did that scouting on the Panthers as well. But anyway, Bucks Princess in the chat room wants to know if anyone else thought the world ended when Mankins went down. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, let's try and find some high points. A guy who wasn't supposed to play did pretty fucking well in kick returns. Solomon Patton. As a fan who's been in Raymond James Stadium many, many times and seen a number of comebacks when Buccaneers fans left in the third quarter because, oh, it's the same old Bucs, screw this, I'm going home, I'm going to beat traffic, blah, 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 blah. I was standing with my buddy Bruce, sits in front of my buddy Brian, Bruce's dad, and you had that feeling when we went down there and scored the first touchdown, got the stop. Everything started lining up. And then the errant pass that Deshaun Goldson should have picked that he didn't, and you could feel the hearts ripped out of the Bucs fans. Now, there's a reason he's not a receiver. If he could catch, he probably would be one. That said, that's a play you have to make. Now, one of the things coming away from this game, I was talking to some guys after the game, and they're like, well, what do you think? They're going to make a change. What do you think is going to happen? Listen, Lovie Smith, you're going to, again, this is another guy you got to ride or die. He is going to be conservative. The non-field goal attempt into the wind. Now, I don't know how strong that wind was. I know that going with the wind, they were kicking the ball at the pirate ship. It must have been stronger than I thought. Now, Leadership South in the chat room just said something that I know he doesn't really believe because I know he knows better than that because I know he's a coach. It doesn't come down to one play. A game is made up of a ton of plays. Now, there are plays that can make a difference, certainly, but he shouldn't have had to make that play had we made any of a number of other plays throughout the game. That said, despite playing as poorly as we did in the first half, which may have been as poorly as I've seen us play in a long fucking time, it did come down on that last play where you could have beaten him. E2 is going to say something I think is a very common fan epithet. We can't beat Derek Anderson. As if that means something, guess what? They're all paid to play the fucking game. Have you looked at Derek Anderson's stat line? Did you look at the passes he threw? The pass to Kelvin Benjamin, two of them. The one to the touchdown and the one on the crossing route. This guy was throwing darts. It wasn't like he was throwing shitty passes. He wasn't making bad plays. He was facing pressure. He's a pro quarterback. Now, whether you think he's a great quarterback or not, doesn't matter. I know that fans only think quarterbacks are great if they name Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. Guess what? Tom Brady got his fucking ass handed to him by the Dolphins. This constant myth that if we don't know someone's name, they must suck. Or if they were a quote-unquote journeyman, they're not good enough to play in this league. You guys need to go ahead and put that shit in a box somewhere and light that fucking box on fire. These guys are all professional players. That's why you cannot overlook this shit. Oh, Cam Newton's not playing. We're going to kill these guys. Bullshit. There were a number of plays where we had really good coverage and we're ripping at the ball. And Derek Anderson put the ball on their receivers. And guess what? They caught him. That's what you do. They get paid to play too. We knew going in that we had to win the turnover battle. The keys that we had to the game before Mark Cook calls in at 9:30 was we had to disrupt. The defense had to disrupt. It didn't. Our offensive line had to block. It didn't. And we had to win the turnover battle, and boy, did we not. So three keys to the game, we managed to shit the bed on all three of them. That's never good. Now, the flip side on the offensive line discussion, if you recall, we were talking about with Steve White last week. This is a team in Carolina that came in with Ryan Khalil as the only returning starter, and then a bunch of no-names who were all paid to play the game. They took our defensive line, which had looked downright ferocious, and while they didn't dominate them per se, they dominated them enough. They were able to run enough. They were able to throw enough We gave up 3 sacks for 19 yards loss. One of them was on Brandon Myers because, as I've mentioned before, Brandon Myers still, to this day, has not blocked in a Bucs uniform. Every time we have Brandon Myers in where he's in pass protection, we should go ahead and assume that it's going to be a sack. I heard someone say the other day that when an offensive lineman recovers a fumble on a sack, he's most likely the guy that missed the block. Guess what? Now, I agree. I think Josh was trying to do too much. I think that when you're in a situation like that, there's a lot of pressure on these guys. You know, they sure as hell want to win. I know Gerald McCoy came out and made a plea to the fans, stick with us, you know. That's what they got to do. Because this fan base, boy, I'll tell you what, they were ready. Now, I've beaten up the fans a lot tonight, and I'll continue to do it. And again, I don't give a shit what anyone says about it because I'm not worried about anyone calling out my fan card. That said, the ones who stayed got loud. That crowd was tremendous. Now, McCown Shoe, great name in the chat room. Doug Martin did pick up a couple blitzes. You're absolutely right. And I heard a lot of people upset with Doug Martin. I don't know if it was Skip or B-Shuck. A couple of you guys were talking about, you know, wanting to see more Bobby Rainey, which is fine. Bobby Rainey's a little different, and Leadership South and I were talking about, he's got a little different burst. I still think that Doug Martin is your best back on the team. I just do. It doesn't look like it right now, but I believe that to be the case. But if he can't pick up blitzes, we've had guys like that before. I don't care how good you are at other things. If you're going to get your quarterback killed, you cannot be there. And there was one at least that he completely blew his pickup. Completely blew it. So the blocking is not limited. The blocking ineptitude is not limited to the offensive line. Skip, you know, Skip in the chat room was talking about Mike James. I agree. You know, we know our team, obviously. No one else knows these guys. That's why I always laugh and say, oh, we can trade so-and-so for whatever. No one knows who the fuck Mike James is, unless they're a U guy or they're a Bucs fan. That said, all of us like what Mike James can do. We've seen what he can do. But none of that matters if we can't fucking block. Now, Bobby Rainey was fighting for some yards. Now, the other side to this was, as the Carolina Panthers, when you look at the time possession started to shift in the third quarter, I think we had the ball 10 minutes, almost 11 minutes of the third quarter, that Panthers defense started to get tired. I hate to point out obvious things and try and simplify this, because I know that there's a lot more complicated shit that goes into it. But in the first half, if your defense is on the field for 23 minutes, it's a fucking miracle that they didn't get scored on more. Absolute miracle. In the third quarter, when our offense got to dictate a little bit, the game started to change. Now, what the staff has to do is go figure out how to get those conversions, how to stay ahead of schedule, how to not be as fucking predictable based on your position groupings. Because if our staff, now our staff is pretty damn good, but if our staff has got this stuff, bet your ass that the Rams staff has it. Now, I just saw today Chris Long is out for 6 to 8 weeks. So what? We didn't talk yet about injuries. I'm going to ask Mark Cook to give us an update on injuries. We did see the information today that Mike Jenkins went on an IR, torn pec muscle. A lot of people were on Mike Jenkins' ass because he didn't look back and find the ball when he was covering Benjamin on that nine. He couldn't have been any more in the guy's pocket. Now, he should have turned back and found the ball. And if he's going to interfere, he should have interfered effectively. Right, that's the only rule I ever have. Like, penalties of aggression, I think, is the phrase that I've heard people use. If you decide that you can't turn around and find the ball and you're going to interfere, that son of a bitch better not catch it. He better not catch it. That said, Altron Vern, I think, played very well. I thought, in general, it wasn't like there was a problem with a lot of our secondary. The problem was We apparently didn't even realize Greg Olsen played for this team. Now, I don't know how you come into a game against the Carolina Panthers and don't know that Greg Olsen's on the field. But Greg Olsen was bitch-slapping anyone who bothered to try and cover him. It did not matter what we did. The only time they didn't complete the ball, complete a pass to Greg Olsen, is when they overthrew it. That's it. I think he had 8 receptions, or he's targeted 11 times, 8 receptions, something like that. He could have had 20. Now, whether it was because our linebackers were too far up when they were showing that A-gap blitz that they never come with, or whether it was the safeties weren't up enough to fill in, right? I'm not sure because I don't know what coverages they were in. And that's one of the things we got to be careful of because a lot of people are going to guise this as a Tampa 2 problem, right? You don't always know when we're supposed to be in a Tampa 2 and when the mic is supposed to go back to the deep third. You just don't. So, comment in the chat room, absolutely. There was a comment that play action killed us. It does. Our linebackers tend to jump on play action. They're going to have to be coached about that. E-Tune says, imagine when Cam gets back in there. I don't know that Cam made a bunch of difference in that game. Derek Anderson was on. Now, does that mean that I think he's as good a quarterback as Cam? No. But on that particular day, Derek Anderson had his shit working. I don't know why, and I haven't checked the blitzes. I think that my man Yuccaneers has that data in here, but I don't know how easily accessible it is, how many times we actually blitz, because it seems as though we showed a lot of blitz and never came until the second half, which I don't understand. Because for the first time in as long as I can remember being a Bucs fan, we actually seem like we can get home on blitzes. And I would much rather give up yards being aggressive on defense than being passive. Sizzle in the chat room wants to know if they got penalized for Cam running into the huddle. I don't believe so. I don't know that I care. I didn't notice it real time. I noticed it on the highlights. I saw all the highlights about it. Strictly speaking, I think it is against the rules. And even if he was active, he probably would have been the 12th man in the huddle, which is also against the rules. But I don't know. Well, what are you sampling? Kurt, what did I say now? Oh, Jesus. Let's talk a little bit about the no field goal attempt. So I immediately heard the cries of why do you get rid of Connor Barth if you don't have any faith in Murray? I don't believe it is faith in Murray. Now, I heard someone else say, I think it was, might have been Bruce, that Lovie said going that direction, his number was the 35-yard line, and that sack put us on the 36. I don't know how you argue with that, right? Now, in Lovie Smith's perfect world, if you're just outside of field goal range, you don't feel comfortable trying to take the field goal, regardless of who your kicker is, Connor Barth or Patrick Murray, doesn't matter. But you've got Kanan who's throwing darts in the punting game. You pin the team back. You let your defense get you the ball back, and you've got a short field. That's the belief. The problem is our defense wasn't able to do that. Our defense wasn't able to get us the ball back. And that's where you start having some serious problems. But in the revisionist history that it is a football game, that one certainly loomed large. But make sure you get your skulls and swords in. For those of you who don't remember the skulls and swords, for those of you who are new, skull is the bonehead of the week. I suspect we'll get a lot of Josh McCowns there. And then the sword is the MVP superstar of the week. I don't know if there are a lot of options on that side of the equation, but we'll certainly talk about it. Let me see here. What did I want to talk about next? We covered the keys to the game. The turnover battle definitely got flipped. They converted when they needed to. We couldn't. Someone mentioned earlier, I think it might have been Sizzle, missed tackles. There were more missed tackles than I expected. Now, one of the things they did do, and what this defense is sort of designed to do, is to keep the ball in front of them and then rally to the ball and make the tackle. It seemed like there was wrong hip targeting a lot of times because we were missing tackles going for they were going for the inside hip or the outside hip, which I've always trained my guys to do. And Leadership South weigh in on this. I've always trained guys to go outside hip because at least that way you're forcing them back in to help. But I remember watching the Hawk tackle stuff, and he has him go after the inside hip and then wrap and roll the same way Coach Chiano did. But we did have a number of missed tackles. I'm not sure what the exact stats are. I can find out what they are. But I didn't notice, you know, Sizzle's really on this tackling thing. I don't remember it was being particularly horrible tackling. I know we had some misses and some guys where we had them dead to rights, and that missed tackle is what got them the first down or whatever. But I don't remember being excessive. Let me go see if maybe I'm just smoking crack or something. I don't have the physique of a crack smoker, but, you know, you never know. No, they credited us. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, they credited us with 15 missed tackles, of which Levante David had 5. Holy shit, guys. This is going to blow your mind. How many in the chat room, how many missed tackles do you think Carolina was credited for? I'll wait because of the delay. I won't wait that long. Carolina was credited with 2. So, Sizzle, I sit corrected. I sit corrected. The tackling was atrocious. It was absolutely horrible. I must have been watching a different fucking game twice. Yeah, so Levante David with 5, Jonathan Banks with 3, or Mason Foster with 3, Jonathan Banks with 2, and then a bunch of 1s. You know, and you'll have some of those. I know one of Levante's was a tackle for loss that he blew, and he was pissed about it. But at the same time, he was in position to make the tackle. Kurt Creel is obviously killing people in fantasy football. How many chances do they get to tackle? Nice. Oh, God, E2, I love you, but you have been a constant stream of things I hate tonight. Ray Rice chat, Jameis Winston chat. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. I was watching New York. I did watch New York the next day. They were terrible, too. All right, let me check the mailbag real quick, see if you guys have any questions. Mark Cook is supposed to have called in at 9:30, but it's 9:37. So at some point he'll probably call in, or maybe he forgot. I don't know. You never know with Mark Cook. He's crazy. But if he doesn't, we'll just continue talking about. We'll also talk a little bit about the Rams. Because as you know, we dual purpose the shows now on Wednesday nights. Mason Foster was horrible, according to someone in the chat room. And I don't remember him being horrible. He seemed pretty mediocre to me. But then again, the entire defense looked mediocre. The only ones who graded out well, according to Pro Football Focus, were Verner, David, and McCoy, with a lot of milk toast in the middle. But I'll tell you this. One thing that is a clear, an absolutely clear message is if you are not the guy that you're supposed to be on film, your locker can be repurposed. They are going to continue. I forgot who it was. It may have been Bucks Nation or Joe Bucks. I don't know who it was. But they essentially said, you know, he's going to keep shuffling this lineup until he get what he want. Skip Brown's continuing his Michael Johnson sucks campaign. He did dress for the game. Allegedly, he rolled his ankle early. And that allegedly impacted his performance. I didn't see a lot of abuse on him around the edge, but he got graded very poorly in pass rush, which is exactly what he's supposed to be good at. So whether or not he's working hard or any of those things, Michael Johnson's presence here is going to be one of the things that he has to generate sacks. That's what he was brought. He was brought in. Now, I'm not saying he's in Simeon Rice's category, guys. Simeon Rice was a unique talent, no doubt. But he was certainly brought in there. To get pass pressure, and he's not doing it. How many snaps did Solomon get if he came in that early and then he got broomed this week? It's funny, he had 2 plays in a row where he made plays. Where the Johnson played 55 snaps. Injured or not, he was in there. So his feelings were bruised. Yeah, hey, not guess walk the plank. I'm not sure we had to walk the plank for, but we wanted to shoot the plank at the tailgate, but we didn't get a chance to because we all forgot about the shot because we were too busy doing other things. All right, so with Mark Cook being late, we're going to go over what Steve and I had gone in and weighed in. We had predicted our offensive and defensive MVPs, and to be honest, I know that we had MVPs. I had predicted that McCown would do well. Steve had gone with Vincent Jackson. I don't think either one did particularly well. So I'm going to fail us both on those. On the defensive side, he had picked Mark Barron. I had picked Gerald McCoy. Gerald McCoy statistically did well, but here's the thing. When I went back and watched it the second time, the first time I was pissed because I had said, and many of us had said, that we had not seen Gerald McCoy blocked at all. He still didn't get blocked. When I watched it the second time, the guy is blowing shit up. Yeah, Solomon got 31, but Michael Johnson got 55 snaps, was my point, Jimmy. But we just weren't able to get home. Now, if he's going to blow that side of the lineup, then guys, and this is what's going to kill us. We've talked about it before, and whether you want to blame the guys like Adrian or Michael or McDonald. I mean, McDonald graded out extremely poorly. A guy who had been absolutely balling his ass off in the preseason was a ghost. How many snaps did he have? That's a question I'd like to know. 59 snaps. He graded out incredibly poorly in every aspect of the game. This is a guy who we thought was going to come in here and absolutely make a difference and did fuck all. Now, I didn't remember seeing him make a play. At least I saw, you know, A.J. Clay get a garbage sack with a bobbled snap or whatever it was. He went and collected it, and he was out there running around and, you know, making some impact. But shit, if Gerald McCoy's going to blow up that side of the line, you've got to take advantage of that. And we couldn't do a damn thing. So, you know, I'm giving the defense a bit of a pass because the offense kept him on the field too long. But holy crap. But did we throw a slant, Shadow Hawk? I don't remember us not throwing a slant. And more to the point, it's not that I'm thoroughly in love with the slant route because we did throw one that Vincent Jackson dropped. It was a little behind him. But it still hit him in the hands. It didn't hit him in the hands. It actually hit him in the chest, in the pads, and then it bounced off of his pads. The one thing that I did see when I was watching it the second time was, and we've talked about this before, and I know that you guys are maybe, and I'll go back to what Not Guest is saying in the chat room, whoever Not Guest is, about my comment about Simeon Rice and why I made the comment. I wasn't saying he was like Rice. He was brought in like Rice to generate pass rush pressure. I thought it was pretty clear that I don't think he is like Simeon Rice, and I don't think they're in the same category. But maybe I didn't make that clear enough, or maybe there's something else, another point that Not Guest is trying to make. But when the Panthers went to very, very soft zone and pulled their corners way back off the line, Coach Arroyo, whoever the hell was making the play calls, I think it was Coach Arroyo, absolutely adjusted. Absolutely adjusted. We went to a quick comeback up top, forced those guys to come back up. That's something that we haven't been able to do with an offensive coordinator here forever. Absolutely ever. So, I, generally speaking, was not upset. I wasn't upset with the route combinations. I wasn't upset with many of the play calls, to be honest. I don't like that we didn't run the ball more, but we couldn't fucking run the ball. Now, why it is, it's all good, Not Guest. Why it is, and Leadership South, if you're still in the chat room, looks like you may be. So I'll drop this knowledge on this chat room again for E2, since he hasn't been here for a while. These ads are not my ads. These ads are because we use the free version of Ustream. Because we don't have the budget to spend the $500 a month or whatever it would cost to do the not free version of Ustream. If you don't want to see the ads, use Chrome and use Adblock, as everyone in the chat room has said probably at least 10 times. And then you don't have to see them anymore. That's the end of that public service announcement. Now, Leadership South, if your offensive line is struggling, you've got Javorski Lane who can block. You've got Luke Stocker who can block. Did Luke Stocker even play in this fucking game? I think he went in there and got a play, didn't he? Hold on, let me see here. He's got to be down towards the bottom. 12 plays. I swear to God, I will never understand the Brandon Myers affection. I just won't. But you've got these guys. You've got gigantic receivers. Now, I admit, we don't necessarily want... We don't necessarily want our great receivers, our studs coming in there and mixing it up. But for God's sakes, guys, give me some motion and cracks or something to help this offensive line. Give me a push-pull game or a pin-pull game, depending on where you get it from, with the guard and the tackle so that we can mix some things up. You can do that in a zone blocking scheme where your tackle crashes down, your guard loops around. This isn't particularly hard. But we got to do something to allow this offense to not be one-dimensional. No one-dimensional team is going to win, right? And that's, I think, when Jimmy's article gets posted, will be the message here, is that we just gave up. We had to, and we shouldn't have had to. So, anyway. All right, so Swords and Skulls, are they spent? Are they posting those over on the Facebook page? Because I'll go over to the Facebook page if that's where they're posting. I want to make sure people get credit for it. I want to do a chat room shout out as we go through the chat room. Let me see here. What the buck? I'm sure she will send me a link of where they're at. So before that happens, I will give the shout out to the chat room. Bucks Princess, Jimmy Johnson, Juice31, Jace, Jackie Williams, Skip Brown, Buck for Life, Sav, Spent, Kurt Buckshot, Creel, B Sizzle, Adam Buckhead, Hogue, E2, Leadership South New Jersey, Bucks Fan, Patches, Not Guest, B Shucker, McCown Shoe, The Buck Realist, Shadowhawk, and One Viewer. Thank you guys for coming out to the live show. Really appreciate you guys being in the chat room. It makes things very interesting. The Swords and Skulls are tough this time, right? Here's the thing. There was so much excitement. So much excitement. And we just got punched in the dick, right? We went to a fight that we thought we were going to win, and we just got punched, and it sucks. And it's great, great that we made a game of it at the end, blah, 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 blah. It didn't matter because we thought that our team was much better than they were. Look at that. Spent, give me the link for the Skulls and Swords. Awesome sauce. I don't know what Facebook is doing to me right now, but we'll get those up here. What is this? I do not need to boost this post, Sam. I am. All right. Here we go. And Facebook is popping all sorts of shit. All right, G. Mark Cook just called in. Holy shit. Mr. Cook.
You know, I don't know if I have a friend who's any more technologically advanced than you are, yet you don't text me.
Okay, hold on a second here. You know I love you, right?
Kinda.
Okay. So, I was supposed to text you whilst doing a live show to tell you to call into the show that you know you need to do?
Well, you managed to Facebook message me that I forgot about, yes. You know, a text, a Facebook message. What's the difference? You could have made Spent do it.
Listen, there's...
I'm so sorry. I swear, we had a late dinner, first night without my son's football practice, watching some old 24 episodes, and I totally, totally forgot about it. My apologies.
Well, I expect nothing less, to be honest.
Seriously, why didn't you text me? Come on.
It doesn't matter. You're here now. You're here now, and that's the important part. I think that the levels are probably okay. My levels look hot in here.
You look hot in there.
Well, you know, you'll have that from time to time. For those of you who don't know who is on the phone, we have the official Ginger Badass. And by the way, Spence said she did message you.
On Facebook also.
Well, you were probably on Facebook looking at pictures of old girlfriends anyway.
No, again, I was doing the family thing here, and I was texting people, but I didn't see that. But anyway.
Anyway, we've got the Ginger Badass, Mark Cook from PewterReport.com, live and on the line. We've been lamenting the game. I've got some questions for you. The fan base is obviously quite upset. I know, and I want to address one thing. I know that Myers is the leading receiver in yards and catches. I get it. I don't know why he was targeted that much. What I don't understand is why they're so infatuated with him. I know he can catch the ball. He plays better than he practices. But he is absolutely a liability in the blocking game in every capacity. If you want to put another receiver on the field, then put another receiver on the field. So,
Okay, he's not the best blocker. I mean, if you look at the guy, and again, we talked to him in the open locker room session today, you know, he's not a big, massive guy. And that's what we've talked about with Luke Stocker. You and I both agreed. I've watched this guy since OTAs and saw how good of a blocker, how strong he was anyway, and how much of a different body type than he had of any of the roster tight ends, going back to when Tim Wright was here and Cameron Brate was not on the practice squad but practicing. I mean, Luke's definitely that blocking tight end. That's what he's here for. And, you know, Brandon Myers is just a couple years away, removed from 82 catches with the Oakland Raiders, you know, including 11 in that game, I think, against the Buccaneers. He had a big day, in other words, that big Doug Martin game a couple years ago in Shiano's first year. But, you know, I don't know what the love affair super infatuation is, but, you know, he's a reliable guy that they feel can win matchups with linebackers, and I think that's where they're trying to utilize him and do that. I don't know that they're counting on him to be a blocker, but I think part of the problem was Austin Seferian Jenkins did get banged up in that game. In fact, is in a walking boot right now. Not sure if he's going to play this week. Tim Wright's gone, and so it was basically just him and Stocker as really the only healthy options in that game. So I think maybe that's why you saw him on the field blocking a little bit more than normal, but I don't know that for sure. But, wow, of all the things, I wouldn't have expected the Myers thing for that to be the topic of conversation.
No, that's just where we got, because we've talked about a bunch of stuff because the show's been going on for almost an hour.
So
we talked about a bunch of other stuff. But since you brought up injuries, by the way, that's actually really solid conjecture. I like it. With ASJ going out, I see him and ASG being not replaceable, right? They're not interchangeable, but they're similar, right? Because ASJ, despite being a giant human being, not a particularly good blocker yet. So if you're going to go into either a single tight end where you're going to have him go onto a route, or if you're going to go into two tights and you want one of the guys to be a guy going out in a route, that's the guy you're going to use. So totally get that. That makes sense. Injuries. Tell us about ASJ. What are your thoughts about him? Tell us about Logan Mankins. Tell us about the walking wounded, except for the guy that we've already put on the shelf, Mike Jenkins.
Well, there's a lot of them, I didn't have my computer open, and I still don't have it open, or I would have saw that you messaged me on Facebook instead of texting me. But, we've got an injury report up right now. Austin's, was in a boot, some sort of ankle-type injury. And let me just go down the list here real quick, because I can't remember off the top of my head. But, I mean, look, they're banged up. And they're banged up certainly in the secondary with Jenkins going out. And, again, that to me maybe is the most puzzling deal of all of these Lovey brought in, Jason Light brought in players. Not that I don't think Mike Jenkins has been a semi-productive cornerback in the league since he came out of USF, but my biggest thing was, here's a guy who got no practice really whatsoever throughout the preseason, and yet still maintained that number one position on the depth chart, which was a real shock to me. And we talked to him last week, right before the Panthers game. Really, his first day really back out at practice, and he admitted that he really wasn't in football shape. And here you've got him going up against Kelvin Benjamin. Now, granted, Benjamin's a rookie, but at the same time, that was a little bit of a surprise to me. And Mike Jenkins just really wasn't ready to play football, but the staff and the front office decided that he was, and it turned out that he was a liability in this game. Now, part of the reason he was in there is because Jonathan Banks got banged up, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, probably had to go through some of the concussion protocol things, because I believe the injury during the game up in the practice box when they announced injuries was a head injury of some sort, so I would suspect it had to do with a concussion type or a suspected type concussion thing. Obviously, he was cleared because he was back in the game later on, but there's a lot of guys banged up. Adrian Claiborne has an elbow injury right now. I'm trying to think who else, and of course my enemy's
well,
running.
If you want to go on the big one, what's up with Logan Mankins? They said it was a hyperextension. He may be fine.
We thought we were going to talk to Logan today. In fact, we had left open locker room, and they said go back in, that we were going to get him, but for whatever reason it didn't work out, so we didn't get a chance to talk to Logan today. Hopefully tomorrow. In fact, I suspect we'll be able to get a better indication of what's going on with Logan tomorrow. Again, give me 2 seconds here. Here's the injury report here. And Mankins has got the knee injury, and when we talked to somebody right after the game, a team source who told us that, they were relieved, they didn't feel that it was any type of structural damage to his knee, and Lovey mentioned it on Monday, I believe, that, there's a chance that he plays this week, and I think that's crucial for the success of this offensive line. Gary Gilkey came in and did what Garrett could do. Let's not forget, this was a guy who literally joined the team exactly 7 days before that Panthers game. I mean, he was cut by the Browns, and I'm not sure, I can't even remember if he was re-signed to their practice squad or if the Buccaneers claimed him off of waivers, but, he was brought in literally that Sunday before the Sunday game against the Panthers, and then thrown into the fire relatively early in that game against the Panthers, against one of the best front fours in the league. So, needless to say, he did struggle quite a bit, but there's a chance Mankin plays. I think it's, this team needs him to play, because you talk about, going from one extreme, and then following up with a team just nearly as good. Now, with the news that Chris Long is out for this game, that helps the Buccaneers a little bit. But let's not forget Robert Quinn, who led the NFL with sacks last year, and Aaron Donald, a guy that Peter Report really liked a lot, playing on the inside. And they've got some other talented defensive linemen. Daquan was able to practice today, full participation, which was good. But, you know, is he going to get enough practice in, and is he going to be 100% enough to dress and play Sunday? That's probably not going to be determined until later in the week. And as I mentioned, Adrian was banged up with an elbow, and DeMar Dotson was limited today with a hamstring injury. Michael Johnson found out he got rolled up on second or third play of the game and continued to play, and a lot of people, including Pewter Report, considered his game very disappointing. And it was, because they brought in this guy, paid him a whole lot of money to go get the quarterback, and he didn't do that on Sunday. But we didn't realize it at the time. He was doing it basically on one leg, because he's in a walking boot from time to time. I actually talked to him today out of the open locker room on the way to the cafeteria, which I'm completely not supposed to do. But when it's just me and him walking, I'll sometimes say hi to the players and just get an idea of how their health is. And, you know, he said, I'm out of the boot, so that's, you know, a sign in the right direction. So we'll see where he is for Sunday. Doug Martin also banged up with his knee. He didn't practice at all today. And then Bradley McDougal, the safety, he was able to go a little bit, but that's not really anybody that's going to contribute this week, unless one of the other safeties go down. But Rashawn Melvin, he didn't participate, and of course, also Safarian Jenkins. Both those guys have ankle injuries, Melvin and Safarian Jenkins, so they're banged up.
Do you have any updates on Mike James? Skip Brown in the chat room wants to know if you have any updates on Mike James.
Yeah, he'll be fine. You know, he was healthy enough to play. I think he played in like 9 plays last game, maybe special teams. Obviously, he didn't get any carries, but you know, he's. You know, if he's not 100%, he's certainly well enough that he can contribute if there were some issues with Rainey, and especially if Doug's not 100%, then I think you'll definitely see some number 25 getting this game this week for sure.
Well, speaking of that, or actually, I'm not going to use that transition. I'm going to use a question that Spent loves when they use on CNN. What's the temperature like at One Buck Place?
This very, very funny story here. Here's some of that inside scoop that people love.
They do.
It really isn't.
I wish I had like a sound effect I could play, like a da da da.
Okay, this is a true story. Today is Wednesday. Yesterday we had open locker room. Yesterday I got to One Buck a little late. Opened. I was a couple minutes late, and so you know because you've been inside there. But let's paint a picture for the people. We got the big media room. There's a little side door that goes through the back of the media room. There's an ATM for the players there. There's a hallway that goes to the media studios, and then there's two double doors that lead down the hallway to the cafeteria, the meeting rooms, the big theater, and also the players' locker room, the lounge, everything. The main hallway, we'll call it, on the backside of One Buccaneer Place. But anyway, there's two double doors there, so I had to text the PR person to come let me in because they keep it locked. They didn't used to keep it locked, but when Shano came along, they decided to, as Greg told me one day, as he found me also late and outside that door. He said, we've got you locked behind the Iron Curtain, as he called it, so I still call it that. So yesterday I was locked behind the Iron Curtain, and as I was waiting for the PR assistant to come unlock the door, there's literally a thermostat right by on the corner of that wall, and it read 70.7 degrees. And I thought to myself, wow, that's 3 degrees warmer than it used to be with Greg Schiano. So literally, I do have inside scoop for you. The temperature has been raised 3 degrees in the building right now. It's still rather chilly. My bright lights are on at all times when I'm in there. I tend to wear thin T-shirts.
What an asshole.
It's a little chilly in that building. Yeah, you're using the A word, but I mentioned bright lights, and I'm a jerk. But, yeah, okay, I get it.
I didn't call you a jerk for mentioning bright lights. I don't care if you do that. You can talk about your nipples all day long, Ginger.
Yeah, good.
I don't care.
I don't have a whole lot going on for me, but I got some good breasts.
Well, that's good to know. No, the reason I say that is in various world conflicts, the question that the hard-hitting reporters would ask their poor bastard who's about to get killed in crossfire, what's the temperature like on the ground in Baghdad? And the guy's like, fuck, I'm going to get killed. That's the temperature. So, but with the fan base the way it was, everyone was so excited, and then you go in and you get punched right in the mouth by the Carolina Panthers, who no one had given a lot of credit to, and to be honest, I don't know that we have to give them any credit now. They beat us. I don't know whether that gives them credit or it makes us look like shit. I'm not sure which. How does the team feel about it, and how does the administration staff feel about it there at One Buck?
Well, you know, I'll say this, and I put it in a story that's up now on the brand new all-redesigned PewterReport.com that I'm sure we'll talk about later. But you know, Lovey was in his usual laid-back cutting up with the media during his press conference today. And I don't know if he was frustrated something happened at practice. I don't know if it just, you know, one of those days where he didn't feel like dealing with us, which, you know, I don't blame him at all. But You know, to me, I think you could kind of tell that, you know, he was a little frustrated because here we are asking him questions, asking him to relive a day that he's very frustrated about. But I'll give Lovie Smith the credit, you know, and as I did Josh McCown after the game Sunday. I mean, he stands up, takes it like a man, and says, I didn't do a good enough job. You know, I didn't coach good enough and have these guys ready enough. It starts with us, and we'll work on getting it better for next week. And so, you know, the mood around the locker room was pretty normal. I mean, I didn't notice anything different. There wasn't anybody belly aching or crying or, you know, laying in their locker room, you know, calling the suicide prevention hotline or anything. But, you know, but the coaching staff, you know, you could tell Lovie Smith wasn't real happy today. And, you know, again, what the reason that is, I don't really know. But I suspect it's because, you know, we relived that game Sunday that he hadn't talked about really since the day of the game. So it was really our first opportunity to talk to Lovie. Well, we talked to him a little bit on Monday too, but again, he had to relive that. They've had an opportunity to watch film, grade the players and things like that, and I think there were a lot of things that he saw that certainly, like the fans in the stands, really disappointed him, and they expected him to play a little bit better and execute things a little bit better. So that may have been a little part of his non-jovial mood, if you want to call it that. Player-wise, though, everybody seems pretty cool and relaxed. And, you know, the one thing that I took out of this, and Lovie said it also, but Josh McCown today, we get quarterback on Wednesday. Josh is embarrassed. He's frustrated, and he is ready to go out Sunday and make up, and literally these are his words, you know, get the bad taste out of his mouth for his bad play on Sunday. And but he's encouraged about the third quarter. And, again, I'm a glass-half-full guy. People hate hearing that, and I'm Mr. Optimist, or some people call me a cheerleader for the team and all that nonsense. But it's never as good as it seems, and it's certainly never as bad as it seems. And, you know, as bad as they did play for those first three quarters, you know, they certainly were able to get some sort of rhythm throwing the ball there late on Sunday. And people say, well, they were in a prevent defense. Well, Charles Johnson's rushing wasn't in a prevent defense. That defensive line was not in a prevent defense. They were going after McCown, and somehow that offensive line was able to give him enough protection to find a couple guys open for touchdowns. So, you know, there is a little bit of optimism there, and Josh mentioned that today, but he also mentioned the fact that he really wants to get back out there and make up for that game. I mean, he said, I'd play today if I could. Lovie said the same thing. They're eager to get back out there and make amends for how poorly the game went on Sunday.
Well, and they need to, right? I mean, in the chat room, the comment after what you said, Lovie said, was, well, we've heard that for the last 2 years. Well, that's what coaches say, right? It's coach speak. I didn't do enough. We didn't do enough. They have to speak in those terms. They're not going to give you anything more than that.
Right. You know, I don't remember the last coach, and I'm sure there have been some, that said, well, if you know, Jimbo Fisher used to do it a little bit. It used to make me mad with him up at Florida State when he would tend to throw the blame. Well, we called the right plays. The boys didn't execute it.
Nice.
It's crazy when he said that. I want to hear coach speak at this point. I want to hear a coach say I didn't have my guys ready. But so Lovie, yeah, Lovie was doing a lot of coach speak.
Well, and that's fine. And with Josh, I mean, and I'm going to ask you the same question because I want to hear your sort of gut reaction on it because you're a fan of the game as well. I felt as though Josh was pushing. I thought he was pressing, trying
Absolutely.
To make something happen. And
absolutely.
And as soon as he stopped, as soon as he just stepped back and started taking what was given, the game started to come to him. And now it helps that, and we talked about this before you called in, so somewhere, I don't know, an hour ago.
49 minutes.
Yeah, something like that. With 23 minutes of time possession, your defense is going to be gassed.
Mm-hmm.
In the third quarter, I think we won time of possession by like 11 minutes to 4. It was something stupid, right?
Right.
The worm really turned.
Right.
And while, you know, Carolina wasn't in prevent, they certainly didn't have the same zip on the pass rush that they had in the past because the offensive line actually resembled an offensive line.
Right. Exactly.
We knew something was different. There was something new. And then Josh was able to get through his progressions. Now, am I excited about that? Yes. But we got to do that in the first and second quarter. We can't just wait until the third quarter to let that happen. What was your takeaway? Take your reporter hat off and put your fan hat on.
Well,
what did you walk away with?
I mean, complete agreement with you. I felt that way since watching the, you know, since being there at the game and watching it. That, you know, those throws, those two interceptions that he made, are desperation type throws where you're trying to make a play. I mean, and he said it today. He says, I was trying to make a play on one, and the second one, I was trying to save the play. And he understands that, you know, now in hindsight, obviously, it doesn't work that way. Now, Brett Favre is the guy that somehow would have completed that second one. He could have fumbled, picked the ball up, and still got it out there, and it would have been a, you know, a 35-yard gain somehow. You know what I mean? But not everybody can do that. And Josh Freeman's not Brett Favre. So,
Josh
McCown. He's got to learn to eat the ball, take the sack, and not make silly decisions like he did. And he understands that, and that's part of the reason he wants to go out there. But I absolutely agree. Look, we have, in the media, have been talking to Josh Freeman since he signed in March about... Josh McCown, that one too.
Josh.
For the first, this is your, hey, what's it like going in knowing you're the starter? Hey, you're the leader of this team. All the players saying it. I mean, everybody pouring these accolades on him. Certainly there was a ton of pressure for him to perform, an absolute ton. Be honest with you, I think this team would have played better if they would have opened up on the road, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's this expectation and that we've unfairly built up somewhat by the media, by the fans, and you know what? Also by this coaching staff. When Jason Light and Lovie Smith both say, we don't want our fans to be patient. We're in this to win now. They're putting extreme expectations on themselves and everybody on that football team, and that's exactly, I think, what happened somewhat with Josh McCown. Now, here's the deal. You would like to think after 13 years in the league or 12 years in the league, this being his 13th, that he would be smarter than that. But he's a human, and he wanted to save the day. He wanted to make those throws. He, saw ASJ flash in front of him, thought he could throw it up. There's another thing. How many times have we read about the Dunkineers, right? Hey, all you got to do is throw it up to ASJ and these guys, and they'll come down with the ball. Well, that's what he did. Now, when we say those things, throw it up to these guys and let them go make a play, we're thinking more, 30 yards down the field, one-on-one with a short cornerback. Not in the middle of the field where he's surrounded by a couple linebackers and a safety and those kind of things. So, but, I mean, all of these things I'm sure were in his mind and in his brain. And he's a human. He screwed up. He made a mistake. This does not mean he's a bad quarterback. And as I mentioned on 98.7 The Fan earlier today, look, say what you want about his career as a whole, but the man played 8 games in Chicago last year and had a great 8 games. Not one game, not two games. He was 5-3 in those 8 games and threw 13 touchdowns and 1 interception. It was not despite Josh McCown. It was because of Josh McCown that those numbers were the way they were. Now, can he duplicate it here? Who knows? I mean, the dynamics are different. It's a different offense. There's different receivers. There's different offensive linemen. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it. But what I'm saying is I think Josh Freeman is more
wrong guy
of what we saw. Again, gosh, it's late and it's a long day, but Josh McCown is more of the Chicago guy than he is the Sunday guy, if that makes any sense. I'm not saying he's going to go to 13-1 touchdown to interception ratio over the next few games by any stretch, but what I'm saying is I tend to still believe he is more of that quarterback than the one that we saw in the first three quarters on Sunday. And again, you know this because you've coached football. Look, I'm a firm believer in this because you know how hard I watch the offensive line. I think everything starts up front on both sides of the football. Josh McCown was under constant harassment from the opening snap. Then all of a sudden your prized possession guard, right, that you go out and get, the 6-time Pro Bowler, goes down with a knee injury. That's got to affect your psyche a little bit, whether it should or not. That, we can debate that all night long, but again, human nature, that's gonna affect this guy a little bit, and I think that's what happened. And expectations were really high on everybody on this team, and unfortunately, it's tough to live up to these expectations. Let's see how this season develops. Let's see where this football team really is at the bye week, really to get a good indication of what kind of football team they are going forward. And Josh mentioned it today. They still don't know what their identity is. They don't know what their identity is. And those are the things. You can practice it all you want, but until you play real games, it just takes time to really develop an identity on offense.
You mean to say that we have to wait more than one game to know whether or not this team is any good?
Yes, unfortunately. People don't want to hear it.
I have no idea what you're talking about. That's just crazy talk you're spouting off.
We can look in your chat room. We can listen to radio call-in shows. Yes, unfortunately, we're going to have to wait more than one game to see what this team is and what type of team it's going to be moving forward.
Hey, listen, the experts that were sitting around me on Sunday already know what kind of team it is. It's the same old damn Buccaneers. They're terrible. Get Mike Glennon in there so we have a snowball's chance.
Right.
So, anyway.
And we've got one person who still wants that name that I keep screwing up to be back here on our message boards. I don't know if he's just trolling us to get a rise out of people, but he's still screaming for the Buccaneers to go sign number 5.
Oh, trying to get Josh Freeman back. Yeah, I actually heard someone on the radio say that the other day, and I you know me, I'm an unabashed Josh fan,
sure.
but I think that would be an absolutely horrible decision. Not because I don't think he can play the position, I just think everything about it would be a bad idea.
Yeah.
But regardless, all right, Josh, your name is now Josh, by the way, Josh.
Thank you.
Mark, tell folks a little bit about the new Pew Report website. I know you guys debuted that. Tell them why they should be excited. I know that it's on a much better foundation. The speed and performance is much better because I looked at it before. Right. Certainly has an updated look and feel. So tell people a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, one of the things we've tried to do with this website is to really put a lot of focus on, you know, quicker, getting news out quicker, getting things up quicker. In day one, we had some glitches and some issues and things like that, but we got a lot of good information up. We can continually put up these quick blogs, you know, when news breaks and things like that happens throughout the day, evening, night, morning, whenever it is. That's one of the big features. We want people to be able to come here really for their, you know, one-stop Buccaneer news. And that's going to require, you know, us working harder at our jobs, gathering the news, but also, you know, putting it out there. But it's much easier for us to do that now, to be honest with you. And I think it's easier for the readers to find the information when they go to look for it as opposed to our old website. Still a lot of things we're going to tweak and change, and we're certainly taking suggestions. There's several threads on our message boards right now, people who absolutely hate it and have all these ideas of how it could be better. And you know what? We want to hear those things. We like to hear, hey, it's great, but we need to hear what's not great about it, and we want people to help us out with that. Because another great thing about this website and this company, Bayshore Solutions, that we worked with is the fact that nothing is set in stone. There's not one single thing that we designed on this website that can't be tweaked or changed a little bit. And, you know, in the past, in years past, when we've developed websites, that wasn't always the case. So we're very fortunate there that, you know, we can take what the listeners, I'm sorry, the readers have to say, and if it makes sense for us and we think it makes sense for the website in general, we can make those changes. But, just better content, more content, more timely content. It's more vivid pictures and photo galleries. We want it to be more interactive. We want it to be, you know, a place for people to go to get all of their news. We're going to have a dedicated spot specifically just for podcasts. There's a specific spot on the site just for those people who love Scott's SR's Fab Five every Friday. Kind of make it easy, and it'll take a little getting used to. I mean, I'm still getting used to it, and I've been working on the new site, on the back end of it, for, you know, a month or so now. So, you know, there's still things that I'm getting used to it on, but I think all in all, you know, give it a little bit more time. If you're not a big fan of it, I think in time that you'll enjoy the website. But mainly, you know, we want to be able to provide, you know, better, quicker content for our readers, and I think that we've accomplished that much anyway.
Well, I think it's a tremendous step forward, and I think that the chat room has already said that they like it, which is great. Now, another thing we need to remind folks about, of course, is the 19th. We've got an event coming up at Keel and Curly. Are you guys ready for the event? Are you looking forward to that? What can we expect out of Keel and Curly?
What event are you talking about? What are you talking about, podcast? I'm confused.
That doesn't surprise me. None of that surprised me, what you just said.
No, I'm joking. Yes, of course, we're excited about it. Keel and Curly, if people haven't been out there before, first of all, we say it's in Plant City. Technically, that's the address, but it's just right off of the interstate.
It's in Dover
area. It's not, Dover. It's not downtown Plant City or anything. Literally from I-75 and I-4, it's probably a 10-minute drive. So it's not really that far out of Tampa. Oh, by the way, this is a pet peeve of mine. People that always say, you know, Orlando is only an hour away from Tampa. That's just not true.
No.
I mean, I guess if you're going 90 miles an hour, it depends on where you're going in Orlando. Disney may be, but I mean, if you're living in New Tampa, it's certainly more than an hour to get to Orlando. But anyway, I hate when people say that. And I'm not going to sit here and say it's only a 20-minute drive from Tampa. Well, if you're in East Tampa, yes, it's a 20-minute drive. But if you're in West Chase, it's an hour and 15-minute drive. So, and we all know how I-4 traffic is. That 20 minutes could turn into 2 hours. And
Mark,
so
are you
so
trying
forth.
Out for a position on the traffic station? What the fuck are you doing, man? They know
I'm
where it is.
Good, don't I? Yeah. Don't
are you going to be in a chopper tomorrow? My God, it's at Keel and Curly.
And I love those new DOT signs that tell you, you know, your destination, what exit, the approximate time, and things like that. Those are lifesavers if you get stuck in the interstate. But Keel and Curly, just off the interstate in Plant City, Dover, whatever you want to call it.
Look for the big dinosaur.
Great place to go. Great food from Smoking Aces Barbecue there. They've got an indoor bar type area where you can sample different wines and have whatever drinks you want. There's wine tasting tours and things like that won't be going on that night, but during the day and weekends and things like that. So it's really a neat kind of place, and it's neat because where it's at, it's kind of like in a residential area. I mean, it's not in a hustling, bustling type area where there's a ton of people. you know, you're kind of driving through a little country, small community, and all of a sudden, boom, you're at Killin Curly. But really neat place. You know, we're really happy to be partnered up with these guys, and they're great sponsors, and they're huge, huge Buccaneer fans. They really are. And that always makes it a bonus, too, to partner up with people that are true Bucs fans, and the owners there really are. So we're looking forward to having people come out. You know, they got entertainment on the weekends at nights and things. So there'll be somebody playing some live music when people get tired of listening to me and you. And
that never happens.
And our beautiful faces, they'll be able to go listen to some live music and sample some different local wines. And I highly recommend the Plant City's very own strawberry wine. It's my favorite.
Well, there you have it. Mark has gone from the traffic guy to the culinary guy to the ad guy. You cover the whole gamut, which is great. But we are going to be there the 19th. We'll have more information about that coming out. It'll be very much like what we did over Wing House, live podcast format. We'll be discussing some of the articles that are pressing in the Pewter Report world. It's the, still the not officially but unofficially titled What the Pewter Report, or right. WTP. So we will be doing that on the 19th, and I don't know who else from your crew will be there, Mark, but hopefully you'll have some other folks out there as well. We'll have a good time out at Killin Curly. Anything else you want to tell people about before I let you go? And then I have to ask you a couple more questions, but anything else you want to tell people about before we start talking about the Rams game?
No, nope, that's it. I don't want to talk about anything else but the Rams game.
Good.
I mean, if you want me to give you a history of the
No, Jesus Christ. No, please.
The Branch Ranch restaurant, the first person who can tell me about the Branch Ranch restaurant in your message boards, they'll win a free Pewter Report t-shirt. I mean,
you're talking about the place where you used to get the buffet out there, Plant City?
It's not there anymore, but
I know.
It used to be. Anyway, go ahead.
So anyway, what do we have to look for the Rams? Tell this fan base that is deflated, upset, angry in some cases, what they can look forward to this week against the Rams.
Well, first of all, I'm absolutely, completely guaranteeing a win. If they don't win, I will streak at the two-minute warning across the field completely naked. So there's the first guarantee that they can look forward to.
Wow. And, please get that drop, Kurt.
That's absolutely not true. I'm not making any guarantees whatsoever. This team could go out there and put up a duplicate repeat performance. I don't expect that. But again, I talked about it a few minutes ago, Derek. We've all built up expectations in our mind and assumed that things were going to be like this and like that. Lovey's back, and Gerald McCoy is Warren Sapp, and Levante Davis, Derek Brooks, and Mark Barron, Deshaun Goldson, John Lynch, and Warrick Dunn, and Mike Allstar running the football for this team. But it's just not the case. It's their own team, their own identity, and. You know, there's going to be some growing pains, and fans don't like to hear that, but there are going to be some growing pains, and if you didn't think that was the case, Sunday was the evidence that there are plenty of growing pains that they had, and there's still some more to come. But I think you'll see a better football game. I think having Jeff Tedford there, I made a bad analogy last night on the radio. I'll make it again tonight. Jeff Tedford, you know, okay, you go to a hotel, and it's a bed. It's a nice bed. It's a nice pillow, okay? It doesn't have any stains on it underneath the black light, but it's not your pillow, okay? And you know, Marcus Arroyo did fine calling plays, or whoever officially called the plays. That's still a little bit of a mystery maybe, but it was a collaborative effort, they keep telling us. But the bottom line is, this is Jeff Tedford's offense. This is his vision, and that's the word that Josh McCown used earlier today. This was his vision. And, yeah, it did affect the team a little bit, not having Jeff Tedford there over the last week and a half. And I think with Jeff back in the office and back on the practice field and back being the guy that's going to be calling the plays, I think that gives this offense just a little bit more comfort level. Again, the pillow's fine in the hotel, but it's just not your pillow, and it is the same way with having Jeff Tedford out there. I think the offense will respond a little bit better. I think there'll be a little bit more continuity. There'll be more of a streamlined focus on what this offense is going to try and do this week. And having, you know, one single guy, one single voice being that offensive mind, I think is what you'll see from Jeff Tedford. And I think that'll help this offense considerably, too. They need Logan Mankins. They really do need him to be able to play. Logan Mankins on one leg is better than most of the backup guards they have on this football team. But they're going to get better. And Patrick Amame, he had a so-so game. I haven't checked the PFF thing on him. Actually, I did see it. I think it was like .-0.6 or something. I don't know what it was. It wasn't a great rating for him. But if you look at that Javorski Lane run specifically, and I'm sure you went back and looked at it.
I'm the president of the Javorski Lane fan club. Of course I did.
Well, because you guys are similarly built. But
recognize, bitch.
Listen, Javorski, you know, made a great play, great run, But Amame and Dotson just killed their blocks in that play. Amame is driving a linebacker back 7 yards deep. I asked fans to go back and look at that play. Now, again, one out of what, you know, however many offensive snaps they had, 63, 65, whatever it was, that's not good enough to win football games. It's got to be on a more consistent basis. But some of the sacks that were happening, I think, were communication sacks. And, again, we've talked about this with the offensive line. No unit on a football team needs to be more cohesive, needs to know what the guy on either side of him are doing than the offensive line. And Logan Mankins, when he took his first snap Sunday against the Panthers, that was the first time those five guys had ever taken a snap together in a game. And so it's going to take a little while for that offensive line to develop, but I think they're going to. I think there's some talent there. And I think the weak spots that once the other talent starts playing a little bit better, you can maybe hide a little bit of those weak spots if there are some weak links on that offensive line. So, you know, I think the offensive line is going to be better and it's going to gel a little bit better. And each week it should continue to get better. But they got to get healthy and they have to stay healthy.
Well, I wish that that was going to happen. I wish that I thought Logan Mankins was going to play next week, but I don't believe either of those things are going to happen rapidly.
He'll play, I promise you.
I tell you what, I don't know that I'd want him to. If it's a hyperextension, I want that knee to be better. I don't want him out there busting it up. And you know, I don't. In my mind, I think we have a better shot of beating the Rams with the shitty backup than we have later on in the season. I'd rather rest him.
I'll say this: whoever's going to play, you know, it would be better if they're practicing every day this week. And we know Mankins wasn't able to. So, you know, you may be right there. I mean, maybe Gilkey getting in four or five practices or three or four practices, however many practices they get through, including walkthroughs on Friday and a little bit Sunday. Maybe that's better. Maybe him going into a game knowing he's a starter and these guys working together in practice is more beneficial. You may be right on that.
I usually am, Mark. That's the way I do.
You're 50-50.
All right, so you're saying things are going to get better. It's going to be all right. We need
they
to
gotta get better.
Anyway, otherwise, you're going to go streaking at the two-minute warning, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So who are you going to project as your offensive and defensive MVPs?
Offensive MVP this week, I'm going to say that Josh McCown is going to rebound and have a 278-yard passing day with two touchdowns and no interceptions.
I love those predictions. I absolutely love those.
And he's not going to get a dress code violation. He's going to have oatmeal for breakfast. Well, if we're going to speculate, let's just do it, you know, all
his
out.
Stool will be solid.
Yes, he will have a very, very solid bowel movement that morning, absolutely.
So on defense, what are you seeing on defense?
You know, I think somebody in the secondary is going to step up this week. I think the pass rush is going to be better. I mean, certainly, again, you talk about the mood of the locker room. That's something that everybody talked about. And Scott Solomon's not here, and Stephen Means is not here because they just didn't perform the way that Lovey expected them to in the game against the Panthers. So a lot of pressure on this defensive line on this front four. I think we're going to see a few more blitzes. We didn't see very many.
I would fucking hope so.
And you know, look, well, one of the blitzes that came at the end of the game, Deshaun Goldson should have won that game walking in backwards with an interception. You know, I mean, that was a ball that should have been caught and scored. And as poorly as the Buccaneers put, should have won this game. So
yep.
I'm looking for an MVP to come out of that secondary, whether it's Altron Werner with a pick six or an interception or Golson or Barron, something's going to happen. There are going to be turnovers. The Buccaneers' defense will force at least two turnovers this game and will not have any on offense. They'll win the turnover battle, and they'll also win the game 17-10.
17-10.
I still don't have a specific player, but I'll go Altron Werner as my defensive MVP this week.
Quiet but consistent last week. All right, well, Mark Cook, I want to thank you for joining us, albeit late. It was very nice of you to join us. We will be at the tailgate spot that you won't ever come to because that would make you sweat and your soulless ginger ass would fall into some sort of a pit or something because you're out in the sun too much.
Nobody wants to be with me in the locker room after I walked the 19 miles to your tailgate and the 19 miles back in 100-degree heat.
You must have gotten the distance. You must have gotten the distance from Sean King, who always overestimates distance and length.
Well, you can tell me and Sean, we ain't done a lot of walking.
At any rate, I do appreciate it, Mark. I'm looking forward to talking to you again next week and very much looking forward to the time at Keelan Curley on the 19th.
Yeah, it'll be a good time, and everybody go check out our Pewter Report. And in all honesty, you know, you don't have to kiss our butts. If you don't like the website, tell us what we can do better, because, again, nothing is set in stone. We can make changes, and we want to get the input, as much input as we can over the next week, and before we go back to the developers and talk to them about making some changes.
Sounds good, man. Thanks so much, Mark.
All right, man. See you.
All right, bye. Mark Cook from PeterReport.com coming in here, giving us some knowledge bombs. I want to make sure I get the Skulls and Swords covered that you guys chatted up about earlier. We had Jason Watson, Sword from Mankins. He knew we were going to play, going three and out again, so he had faked an injury to give our defense a breather. Skull to Derek Anderson. If you're going to come in as a backup and light us up, at least you have had the courtesy of finding out while you're on your couch. Okay. I like that we got people that are going to be funny about this. Amar, Sword, Brandon Myers. Okay, he loves Brandon Myers. I love Amar, but he and I obviously see things differently in football. Skull McCown, for obvious reason, good QBs know how to find ways around getting dominated. Know how to find ways around a troubled getting dominated offensive line. McCown could audible or do shit on his own. Okay, Amar, dude, I love you. We've been together for a long time. You're not just going to go and start calling out fucking audibles. You're not Peyton Manning. You're not going to change the fucking formations on the fly. Good Lord. Mega Dave Pratt, McClown is a good name. If it happens again against the Rams, yeah, there's all the McCown hate, I thought. This is the thing I love, because I really do love our listeners, and I love the fans that care enough to come in here and get abused from time to time. Go watch the game again and watch all of the plays, not just those two interceptions. Right? That's what I'm going to encourage you to do. And it doesn't matter. I'm not going to talk about this shit anymore. It's going to be pissed off. I'm going to have to go drinking after the fucking show. McCoy for being the bright spot in a miserable situation is the Sword for Mega Dave Pratt. Clayton Jones, Sword, Leslie Frazier. Defense was good enough to keep the game close, limiting the Panthers to field goals. Skull and McClown. That name is sticking. Kurt McDonald, Skull and McClown, either take a sack or throw it out of bounds. Impressive, turned it around in the fourth quarter. Sword starting to really like McCoy a lot more and more. Well, it's good to see that Kurt McDonald's coming around on Gerald McCoy, since the rest of the world did like 2 years ago. Daniel Gonzalez, McCown was on his back a lot. His jersey was Shitano dirty. Ben Curtis, Sword for Werner. He held it down. True statement. Skull and McCown. His turnovers led to 14 Carolina points. It's absolutely true. I absolutely agree. I think it's impossible to give anyone else the Skull this week than McCown, even though I don't think his play is nearly as bad as most of the people are trying to say. When you're looking at the performance, it's hard to give it to anyone else. Stephen Graves, a Sword to Captain Fear. Skull to McCown. Sorry to say it was a sophomoric game. And where's the much hidden offense, which Sizzle asked about as well. Bucko Pat Dawson. Sword to McCoy. Skull to Golton. You get paid millions to make that interception for a pick six. Danny Gonzalez, Sword to Bobby Rainey, trying to stay positive by motivating the team and keeping the game alive. Skull to Mike Jenkins for getting punked out and made to look like a rookie by a rookie. I don't know, man. He was in the guy's jockstrap. Pretty damn good coverage. Guy made a great catch. I'm really funky. I don't get why people are on his nuts about that, but it doesn't matter because he's not playing anymore because he's broken. Dud to Martin, Stud to Owusu from Wesley Piper. Bob Ripperton, Dud to McCown, Stud to McCoy. Thomas Sandberg, Sword goes to Chris Owusu. TD catch was the only good play of the game from anyone. Skull goes to Logan Mankins. I don't think his heart is in there. For a guy that never gets hurt, he sure pussed out on a minor injury. Wow. That is a lot of conjecture there, my brother. CJ Johnson, Sword to Brandon Myers. Skull to Luke McCown. It's not Luke. That's okay, though, CJ. You said in the chat room you did that. And Ryan Winfrey, can't follow the rules and pick a Skull. Be the entire secondary. They let Derek freaking Anderson throw all over them. Sword to McCoy. Because it's the easiest pick. All right. There are the Swords and Skulls from the chat room. Thank you, guys. I see you're doing in here as well, which is good. Let me see. Skull to the person who keeps sending me Farmville requests on Facebook. I think E2 is drinking over there. Skull to Michael Johnson. And no Skull from, or no Sword from Skip Brown. So, all right. Listen. I want to thank you guys for joining us. My belief against the Rams is that we are going to rebound. I think this team is better than they showed this week. I do think it would have been better had they opened on the road. I will sadly be missing my first Bucks game in, I think, 7 years because of my niece. With regards to the predictive offensive and defensive MVPs, I am also going to go with McCown because, damn it, I'm going to go with McCown until he proves me right because I know the kid can play the position. I say kid, he's old. On the defensive side of the ball, I think that Gerald McCoy has to be that guy. He's got to create the pressure. I think that the secondary will definitely do that, but I think he's got to be the guy. And I gave love to Patton. I think Patton did a great job. He was absolutely quoted. You could have quoted me where, Skip? I'm sorry. I don't know what you're talking about, brother. did I steal your line? I didn't mean to. Anyway. Trying to catch up with the chat room. What's wrong with your knees, old school? What you mean? What's wrong with my knees? I don't. E2, you've been almost impossible for me to follow tonight. I don't know whether you're drunk or whether you're just not making any sense. So for you guys in the podcast wondering why I'm talking to people in the chat room, it's because they're in here and I'm interacting with them. But it's very tough when they don't make any fucking sense. So I love E2. It's good to have him back. but he's not making any sense. So anyway, I do think we're going to rebound. I think McCown's going to be the offensive MVP. I do think that McCoy will be the defensive MVP, and I think that we will get a win, and I think it will be a 20-13 win as well. Skull to Javorski Lane. What? That's terrible. No, missing because of my niece. Yeah. Anyway, thank you guys for showing up. Please do, if you're local, get out to the tailgate. The tailgate's going to be amazing as always. That thing will jump off, I think, at 11 or 12. I can't remember when it's set up. We'll be out there earlier getting things set up, but we won't open the bar until then. So you may not want to be there, but you do want to get there early enough to park in our lot if you want to park there, because that thing filled up really fast last week. So big shout out to my entire team. You guys are amazing. When I say my team, it's really our team. This is a group of people that do amazing things, and they make these things happen for you guys. So for all of us, to all of you, let's hope that this week is better than next, and that next show we're actually talking about a victory and the things that we can build on moving forward. With that, I'm going to get out of here and go donate some money for childhood cancer. Get out to 46.7, hashtag whipping childhood cancer. Look at the pie in the face video. Do one of your own. Spread the word. Let's try and fight this damn thing. Thanks, guys.
So I give zero.